Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, June the 6th, D-Day, 2013, 154th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Brian Quinnell. Hey, guy. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
That's okay. You're not looking for me, so that's a good day, right?
Exactly.
Wait a minute. Well, it'll make a little bit more sense when we come back. Not because he's in the Sheriff's Department, because he's also search and rescue. That was the reference, folks. Not that I'm hiding anything. So this afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about what is this area. I think it's probably been maybe Dennis Lewis since we talked about what search and rescue is all about. So it's been a couple of different moons, and we'll talk about some of the different things that Brian and his folks take care of and maybe how to avoid meeting them when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Brian Quinnell. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from, how do we think we were going to pronounce this guy's name? Taciturus?
That sounds right.
Okay, fine. Roman historian, he's been dead for a long, long time. Quote, reason and judgment are the qualities of a leader. I would imagine, Brian, that is also probably a pretty good pair to draw to if you get lost.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, whether you're in a group or by yourself, you need somebody to have sound reasoning and good judgment to make proper decisions once you have made that decision that, yeah, you are lost.
Yeah, more of a realization probably for most of us.
Yeah.
With a search and rescue, what is the normal process that goes on? I guess initially to trigger any kind of a response from you, how long does somebody have to be unreported?
There's that old movie or TV myth that it has to be 24 hours, and that's not the case. As soon as somebody is overdue, they can notify us immediately, and then we'll begin the process depending on the circumstances of initiating a search and rescue.
So an hour could be ample time.
Exactly.
What about for little guys versus older folks?
Obviously, children, the younger they are, the more important it is to notify us sooner. And again, the circumstances will dictate our level of response. If it's something from a parent just realizing that the front door is open and their child's gone, to somebody who was out on a hike, an extended hike for multiple days, and now they haven't reported in, our response is going to be a lot different to each one of those.
Where does search and rescue fit in? Where does Amber alerts fit in?
Amber alerts are for abductions, and that's obviously a lot different than search and rescue. That's a strictly a law enforcement-based function. The Amber alerts, they go out to the public and to notify sworn law enforcement personnel to respond to any tips that come from that. Our search and rescue personnel are 100% volunteers who work under the sheriff and his designee.
Maybe you?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. But you mentioned the front door being open.
Yeah.
Okay. Junior is gone. Nobody knows what happened. I would tend to think most folks, regular people without guns and badges, would say, you know, better to err on the side of caution. We don't know. Trigger it. And let's see if we can cancel it. Yeah. Rather than wait to see, you know, the funny tire tracks in the driveway,
right,
and then do something.
Yeah, definitely. The sooner the better. Obviously, the quicker the response from us, the quicker we can start to eliminate those things. And, typically when that call comes in, the regular patrol deputies are going to be the first ones on scene. then I'm going to get notified. Then I'll have the volunteers notified, and we'll start building it up from there and calling in as many resources as necessary.
What is the most common reason for a search and rescue to be deployed?
Typically, it's because somebody's lost, overdue. You know, they went hiking, and now in this day and age with a cell phone coverage being what it is, usually somebody will...
Would that be spotty?
It's better than it used to be.
Okay, the diplomat.
Yeah, there's enough signal for them to call 911 and for us to get enough information to learn that they're lost, and usually that'll be accompanied by a GPS coordinate of some sort for us to start at.
So when someone is lost or it's recognized that somebody may be lost, how do you guys scramble? Is it just the sheriff? Is it just the volunteers? Do you use the local gendarmes? You bring in the Coasties? I mean, how aggressive do you get with this?
Right. Again, it's going to depend on the circumstance, but there are mechanisms in place to go all the way up to the state level to call in mutual aid from all over the state to come and help us, depending on how big it is. An in-house one, typically, like I said, the responding deputy will begin it. He'll make the determination that obviously it's beyond his scope and capabilities. He'll notify me, and then we'll page out. We have pagers, old school technology for our volunteers. They'll respond and bring whatever equipment we have that we think we're going to need to effectively rescue the person.
What would result in a bringing everybody out? Is it the age? Is it the profile? Is it the numbers of individuals? Is it the magnitude of the individual who is lost?
It's initially when we get a search and rescue, we push the button to get everybody there, get as many resources there, because usually if we can find them earlier, it's a lot better for us, and we'd rather have to send people home than have to try to get more resources later. So,
but bringing in the state folks, I mean, that sounds
different.
That's
a long, protracted, multi-day, multi-week search and rescue, which thankfully we haven't had in a while, at least not under my tenure in this
position. So it wouldn't be like this Hanson goofball in Southern Humble or wherever he is now, or Miller?
We did use we did reach out to our state law enforcement mutual aid counterparts for that, but they weren't search and rescue folks. Search and rescue do not go after fugitives. It's basically somebody who is lost, who isn't wanted for any type of crime.
Somebody who's glad to see you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. That kind of delineates it really quick. Yeah. They come running to you saying thanks, yeah, instead of other responses.
Right.
Fair enough. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Brian Quinnell.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. For years, the Eel River was the state's second largest source of steelhead and third largest of salmon. A UC Davis study estimates it once produced more than 1 million fish annually. This has been replaced by unpredictability. Last year saw a good salmon run, but some years it is very small. Several causes are cited, but all agree the Eel River ecosystem has been degraded. Now a task force of volunteers has come together to pinpoint the reasons and work to restore the watershed. The Eel River Task Force consists of public agencies, Indian tribes, conservation organizations, and others committed to establishing a scientific baseline of the causes of the decline and what might be done to reverse it. The members agree, no finger-pointing. A plan of solutions must fulfill legal responsibilities to protect endangered species while also respecting private property rights. It will be a big job, but a healthy Eel River is worthwhile for all Humboldt County. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the betterment of our communities.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Brian Quinnell. Brian, looking at the overall picture, when you look at like an organizational chart or things of that nature, either search and rescue or some of the different, I guess, kind of cool challenge areas, you know, to me, I think it sounds more exotic than to be behind the car. You know, you have some of these various areas of a deviation, I guess, just a break in the routine as much as anything.
Yeah.
The search and rescue's got to be high up on that. How much of your time, though, is really spent doing search and rescue-related stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty limited. We average about 25 to 30 full call-out search and rescues a year. And usually they're over fairly quickly, within a few hours of when we get the initial call to when we actually find the person.
What do you suggest people do if they get lost? And I know that there's going to be an emotional component to it.
Right.
Or the denial, like you'd said, you know, I'm not lost. I'm just checking out the neighborhood.
Directionally impaired, yeah.
Yeah,
the biggest thing is once you come to the realization that you are lost and you admit it to yourself, just stop where you're at. And if you have a cell phone and you have cell service, call 911 and remain where you are. A lot of times what happens is people will think that they're lost and that nobody's going to come look for them, and they end up getting themselves more lost than they were had they stayed on that trail or had they stayed on that road.
Oh, deeper in or yeah. off the beaten trail.
Yeah.
We've heard some of the survival guys talk about, well, if you're in that situation, find water and follow it. Okay, great. My luck, I find it right to the waterfall, and then I'm in a conundrum.
Right.
Is the creek something that's viable? Is a road cut? Like if you're out in, let's see, not that anybody would ever be out in timberlands.
Trespassing, right.
Yes. Yeah. Get on the road, follow a road, that kind of thing?
The problem is if you don't know where you're at and you have if you have a landmark, stay with that landmark. I am on a road. Just stay where you're at on that road. It's a lot easier for us to find you on the road than it is for you to find where everything is. And you don't know how long that road goes. A lot of these timber company roads will lead for miles and miles, and you'll never see anything else. And the topography of Humboldt County is so rough, and a lot of the creeks and the waterways are so overgrown that you're going to just beat yourself up and get a chance of injuring yourself trying to follow water out to whatever location that may not even be there.
Good to get water, though, if you're out there?
Definitely. If you find yourself next to a stream and it's a hot day and you're inland, you definitely need to be hydrated.
Even if you're on the coast?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're exerting yourself and obviously being lost, your stress level is going to be higher. You want to stay as hydrated as possible. And hopefully before you went out, you told people where you were going and you planned for the day. You have water and snacks with you. So should something bad happen, you can at least hang out for a few hours until we can find you.
What about broken vehicle, broken down vehicle? If you're out, let's say, exploring somewhere and the rig lets go. Will that necessarily trigger any kind of a search and rescue, or is it the time factor in that kind of a situation?
If you know where you're at, if you drove down...
Because we're driving Bald Hills Road.
Right. You broke down on Bald Hills Road, and that's it. You're broke down. You need to call a tow truck. That's not a search and rescue operation. You know where you're at. You know where your vehicle is. You have a mechanical issue. Now, if you decided you want to go hike the Lost Coast Trail, and you took an unmarked trail to the east... And all of a sudden you're lost, and you're in one of those very rare spots where you have cell service. That's when you're going to get a full search and rescue response.
So there are gradations on this?
Yes. Yeah.
When we come into hunting season?
Yes.
Or fishing season, that's what I would presume is the same. Do you guys do anything different? Do you anticipate? Do you have markers out there? Do you talk to people? Do you have meet them out there? On the mountain and say, by the way, and here's your handout?
No, we haven't done that. We do, throughout the year, the search and rescue posse, they do go to community events to help out and raise awareness and talk about search and rescue and things that you can do if you're going to be spending any time outdoors to prepare yourself and be ready should you find yourself lost.
Is there any difference between the Marine posse, the cavalry, and the regular search and rescue?
They all fall under the same umbrella, but there are three different units within the sheriff's office posse. There is the Marine posse where, obviously, they deal with the waterways. Usually those are rescues where somebody gets stranded out in a boat. And then we have the mounted posse, the guys on horseback. And then the ground pounders, the guys who are really good at finding a sign and tracking people.
There really is a skill to tracking.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing to see somebody who is really good at it. And you'll look at something and go, there's nothing here. And they'll go, oh, no, you can see where a guy walked through here. And they'll track them that way.
If we're lost in that kind of situation, make obvious signs?
Yeah, that would be great. Again, I'd prefer if you just stop where you're at. But if you're moving along.
Well, it's like getting to that route.
Right. And you're thinking about it. If you got dry dirt or something, you can write SOS in it, an arrow in which direction you're heading. Or if you're tromping through some high grass, make sure you're leaving a pretty well-worn path that we can see.
And if it's skunk cabbage, take along any kind of defoliant you can choose.
Yeah, exactly.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Brian Quinnell.
Value and selection in new furniture and appliances are just the beginning of the reasons why more North Coast customers like you shop at Burns Furniture. This month, you'll find exceptional prices on the new iComfort mattress sleep system and sale prices on Englander mattresses. It's June, so recliners are on sale, and you'll want to see what's new on the four big floors of furniture and appliances at Burns. Get free delivery from Trinidad to Scotia when you buy at Burns Furniture, 5th and G Streets, downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Brian Quinnell from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department. We talked a little bit earlier, Brian, about the search and rescue side of things. Now, I would imagine you would prefer not to have the need to have search and rescue. The rescue side, is most of that land-based, or do you get a fair amount of water rescues also?
We do get a fair amount of water rescues every year. Boats in the bay or in some of the inland waterways that need some assistance.
Engine craps out on them kind of thing?
That or, some people who get up in North Bay don't know where the channels are and the tide goes out and, yeah, they're stuck on a...
That's right. Was a sailboat or something?
Yeah, there was a sailboat out there.
Did they ever get out of there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So.
That'd be more embarrassing, I think, than anything else. Now, it might get frustrating and expensive real quick, too.
Yeah.
But I would be so embarrassed.
And again, it's going to depend on who's on board, the nature of what occurred, which is going to dictate our response.
Now, on the bay, will you guys work hand-in-hand with the Coasties, or is the bay pretty much your guys' jurisdiction and the Coast Guard is outside the mouth?
It's both. We work with them both inside the bay and then outside the channel. We have law enforcement jurisdiction, so any crimes that occur within the waterway and 3 miles out fall on our shoulders to investigate.
You mentioned the waterways also. Rivers, lakes, lagoons, sloughs?
Yeah, all of them. You know, we got about 400 square miles of water in the county that we're responsible for patrolling and enforcing the laws on as well.
The lagoons, I know, you were a big ripping point of contention.
Right.
A number of years ago when the Sea-Doo personal watercraft.
Yeah.
Started to hit, and the guys would go up there and roar around, and then you got them and the fishermen going at each other. And has that mellowed out?
It has. We haven't gotten as many complaints recently as we have in the years past, and I think that's been to the deputies responsible for the patrolling up there in our watercraft. Just having the presence alone has really made a big difference up there.
What are the rules? If somebody has a boat or a watercraft of any nature in the lagoons, is it a different set than it is on lakes or on the rivers?
It's pretty much the same. I mean, all navigable waterways, you have to fall under the California Boating and Waterways rules and regulations. And, you know, most of it's common sense. You know, if you're coming close to another vessel, slow down, not fast, near the shore, and everything else. And specific waterways will have specific rules for them And it's incumbent upon you, if you're going to take something out, that you know those.
Are they posted there? Is it easy to find?
Do you, I don't know. I don't know if they're posted there or not. I haven't been to that boat ramp launch in a while, so I would hope that they'd have something posted there.
Professionally, that is.
Yes.
Yeah. The rivers.
Yeah.
They got to be different, because you got speedboats sometimes on the rivers. You got, you know, some of the jet boat guys will go roaring around every once in a while. You got the pay-for, you know, the rafting and the canoes and that kind of, and then you got the weekend warriors that are just dropping in and having a little bit of fun.
Right.
How do you guys and gals look at those different uses of the waterway and the river and try to make sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to, and at the end of the day, everybody's able to go home?
Right. Yeah. It's, again, it's about education for us, and that, you know, we want everybody to go out and enjoy the waterways, whether you're using it to raft down the rapids, or you're drifting down in your drift boat, or you've got your power boat up there and you're testing it out before the big race. It's important that, you know, everybody work well together and understand that we have to share the limited resources that we have here. And, you know, knock on wood, we haven't had any major issues on any of the big rivers lately.
Most folks are pretty normal about that stuff, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they are. It's about common courtesy and respect for each other. And, we haven't had any major issues with any of that here recently. So,
now, I can remember a couple of years ago when it was during the salmon season with the gill nets, guys either letting logs go down or going through some of the nets and claiming they didn't see. Everybody's working together a lot better now.
Yeah, and, you know, with the tribal police officers and their tribal resource officers enforcing the aspect of the nets in the water, making sure that they're pulled out at the proper times, it's been a lot better recently. So.
At least this month, huh?
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Times 341. We'll be back with more from Brian Quinnell.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 344. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Brian Quinnell. Brian, I understand you're Mr. Hansen Jr.
Yeah, I took over for him when he got put in charge of the drug task force. I took over running our marijuana unit as well.
How enlightening is that?
Coming from a patrol supervisor working the street level to basically doing marijuana 95% of the time, it's you really realize how big of an issue we have here in Humboldt County.
If you're talking to, let's say we have a third Brian, heaven forbid, and they're from, let's say Indiana. Okay.
Yeah.
What would you tell him that would be the most surprising thing for him to hear?
I think that how pervasive it is here, and that you can't drive a rural road in Humboldt County without seeing a giant greenhouse that more than likely is full of marijuana. And just, you know, we work with investigators from all over the country, and I was talking to an investigator from Texas a few weeks ago, and they were talking about it, one of their major marijuana bus that they had in Texas, and it was close to 500 plants, and they were pretty excited about that. And I said, well,
you didn't rain on their parade, did you?
I told him that was probably an average size grow for Humboldt County.
Easy for them to comprehend?
Not really. Then again, they don't have the whole medical aspect to deal with down there as well. So.
Does that complicate things, or is that just kind of more of an excuse?
It complicates things in the fact that a lot of people who grow marijuana medicinally and then sell some as well think they're not breaking the law. Nowhere in the Compassionate Use Act or in the marijuana patient or medical marijuana program does it legalize growing marijuana. All it does is give you an affirmative defense should you be arrested. So it's still illegal to grow marijuana.
So the barter or the transaction part, there's no wiggle room on that one?
None whatsoever.
Were you surprised when you got into it or when you share with your buddies outside the area the amount of organized crime that's involved and who they are?
Yeah, you know, when we had a couple arrests last year where we started finding people from Bulgaria, Yugoslavia. We had some from the Dominican Republic. We even had a couple Cuban immigrants that were involved in these large-scale marijuana trafficking organizations. That was surprising to me because it's no longer just the mom and pop, as they say.
So when you start getting indication that it is a plantation or a grow with those elements involved, do you treat it any different?
The investigation is the same. The organizations involved in the investigation may be a little different.
So you guys won't do any safeguard things a little bit differently because, I mean, I'm going to stereotype. If there's somebody from the Russian mafia involved, guess what? I'm paying a little bit more attention than if it's Bob and Jane Smith down the road growing this thing.
Right. I think that that's kind of a problem that some law enforcement officers run into, that, if it's just a local grower, it's not that big of a deal. We try to treat everybody the same, no matter what their involvement is. There's always a potential for some type of violence to occur. So I want all my guys to think of it that way and go into it with that mindset. And then once we get on scene, we can determine how it is and our level of response.
So you come loaded for bear in either situation?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, what if it's in an unincorporated area of Humboldt County, but it has streets and sidewalks? same pretext, same attitude, same approach?
Definitely. Definitely. Just because it's within a residential neighborhood doesn't mean that it's going to be any less dangerous. And again, we go in preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. And 9.5 times out of 10, we achieve 100% compliance and there are never any issues.
Grow houses.
Yes.
Big deal for APD, big deal for Fortuna, mm-hmm. as well as Eureka. Big deal for you guys?
It is. It's usually what we deal with is the multiple grow houses that are connected. And that's what we try to work on. And they'll either have an outdoor component associated with them, or you'll have somebody who has multiple grow houses and in an organization.
But in different locations?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not the mother-in-law unit.
Yeah.
If somebody has concerns or issues or wants to know more, can they just give you a buzz or somebody on the team?
Yeah, exactly. They can call us at any time. We have our tip line. They call the main office. They can call us at any time and ask any questions.
Perfect.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about the marijuana next time you're in there. That's weird stuff, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
No problem.
We've been Talking Shop with Brian Quinnell. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. I just want you love to see you tomorrow.